I'd like to ask Peter whether he knows what girls look like down there. I don't think boys are as complicated as girls. You can easily see what boys look like in a photograph or pictures of male nudes. But with women, it's different. In women, the genitals, or whatever they're called, are hidden between their legs. Peter has probably never seen a girl up close. To tell you the truth, neither have I. Boys are a lot easier. How on earth would I go about describing a girl's parts? I can tell from what he said that he doesn't know exactly how it all fits together. He was talking about the Muttermund, but that's on the inside, where you can't see it. Everything's pretty well arranged in us women. Until I was 11 or 12, I didn't realize there was a second set of labia on the inside, since you couldn't see them. What's even funnier is that I thought urine came out of the clitoris. I asked Mother one time what that little bump was, and she said she didn't know. She can really play dumb when she wants to. But to get back to the subject, how on earth can you explain what it all looks like without any models? Shall I try anyway? Okay, here goes. When you're standing up, all you see from the front is hair. Between your legs, there are two soft, cushiony things, also covered with hair, which press together when you're standing, so you can't see what's inside. They separate when you sit down, and they're very red and quite fleshy on the inside. In the upper part, between the outer labia, there's a fold of skin that, on second thought, looks like a kind of blister. That's the clitoris. Then come the inner labia, which are also pressed together in a kind of crease. When they open up, you can see a fleshy little mound, no bigger than the top of my thumb. The upper part has a couple of small holes in it, which is where the urine comes out. The lower part looks as if it were just skin, and yet that's where the vagina is. You can barely find it because the folds of skin hide the opening. The hole is so small, I can hardly imagine how a man could get in there, much less how a baby could come out. It's hard enough trying to get your index finger inside. That's all there is, and yet it plays such an important role. Yours, Anne M. Frank. Saturday, March 25th, 1944. Dearest Kitty, you never realize how much you've changed until after it's happened. I've changed quite drastically. Everything about me is different. My opinions, ideas, critical outlook. Inwardly, outwardly, nothing's the same. And I might safely add, since it's true, I've changed for the better. I once told you that, after years of being adored, it was hard for me to adjust to the harsh reality of grown-ups and rebukes. But Father and Mother are largely to blame for my having to put up with so much. At home, they wanted me to enjoy life, which was fine, but here they shouldn't have encouraged me to agree with them and only shown me their side of all the quarrels and gossip. It was a long time before I discovered the score was 50-50. I now know that many blunders have been committed here, by young and old alike. Father and Mother's biggest mistake in dealing with the Van Dans is that they're never candid and friendly. Admittedly, the friendliness might have to be feigned. Above all, I want to keep the peace and to neither quarrel nor gossip. With Father and Margot, that's not difficult, but it is with Mother, which is why I'm glad she gives me an occasional rap on the knuckles. You can win Mr. Van Dan to your side by agreeing with him, listening quietly, not saying much, and most of all, responding to his teasing and his corny jokes with a joke of your own. Mrs. Van D can be won over by talking openly to her and admitting when you're wrong. She also frankly admits her faults, of which she has many. I know all too well that she doesn't think as badly of me as she did in the beginning, and that's simply because I'm honest and tell people right to their faces what I think, even when it's not very flattering. I want to be honest. I think it gets you further and also makes you feel better about yourself. Yesterday, Mrs. Van D was talking about the rice we gave Mr. Kleiman. All we do is give, give, give. But at a certain point, I think that enough is enough. If he'd only take the trouble, Mr. Kleiman could scrounge up his own rice. Why should we give away all our supplies? We need them just as badly. No, Mrs. Van Dan, I replied. I don't agree with you. Mr. Kleiman may very well be able to get hold of a little rice, but he doesn't like having to worry about it. It's not our place to criticize the people who are helping us. We should give them whatever they need if we can possibly spare it. One less plate of rice a week won't make that much difference. We can always eat beans. Mrs. Van Deed didn't see it my way, but she added that, even though she disagreed, she was willing to back down, and that was an entirely different matter. Well, I've said enough. Sometimes I know what my place is, and sometimes I have my doubts. But I'll eventually get where I want to be. I know I will, especially now that I have help, since Peter helps me through many a rough patch and rainy day. I honestly don't know how much he loves me, and whether we'll ever get as far as a kiss. In any case, I don't want to force the issue. I told Father I often go see Peter and asked if he approved, and of course he did. It's much easier now to tell Peter things I'd normally keep to myself. For example, I told him I want to write later on, and if I can't be a writer, to write in addition to my work. I don't have much in the way of money or worldly possessions. I'm not beautiful, intelligent, or clever, but I'm happy, and I intend to stay that way. I was born happy. I love people. I have a trusting nature, and I'd like everyone else to be happy, too. Your devoted friend, Anne M. Frank. An empty day, though clear and bright, is just as dark as any night. I wrote this a few weeks ago, and it no longer holds true, but I included it because my poems are so few and far between.